listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 110 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this roundtable edition is The Bolt.
Hello.
How you doing?
Very good.
We're missing Chris, and it's kind of a funny story. Chris and I sat down to record this without you, because you were at a class.
Right.
And time got away from us, and we realized that we ran out of time before we started recording. We just got busy working, and then last Friday, you and I sat down to record this episode, and we realized we had no recorder. But now we're here, dang it.
That's right, the show must go on.
That's right, and we are now in the new, brand spanking new CD Baby offices, and it's exciting because we have more space to actually podcast. So in all that turmoil of getting this episode recorded, we were able to keep the mic set up and everything and didn't have to constantly tear down and set up like we normally do.
Yeah, it's much nicer here. We have a butler, too.
That's right. And he brings us coffee whenever we want.
Yeah, CD Baby butler.
That's right. But it's a really cool place we got here. So if you're passing through Portland, we'd love to have you stop by. And you should know that, like we said, it's a new place. So if you go to the old address, we will not be there. The new address is on the website. Mail all your CDs there and your gift baskets to the new address.
Yep. Address the gift baskets to Chris or Kevin or Bolton.
Yes, one of those. And we love gift baskets.
We do.
We do get some on occasion.
Yeah. Some people send us chocolate.
Yeah. The podcast has specifically gotten a few times.
Yeah. Reach out and give us something.
That's right. No, you don't have to. Anyway, lots of interesting things in the news we'll get to in a minute. Anything exciting going on? Your album, finally,
it's
coming to a close.
I finally got it mixed, mastered, and it's being manufactured as we speak. Somewhere in a factory in New Jersey at Disc Makers, my disc is like going through the stages. I don't really know what a big disc making machine looks like, but
I think it bursts the discs and then they just jump into the packages. And
yeah. Does it bake them in like a big oven?
Yeah, it does.
They're all like ripening or like rising.
And I should say, you haven't played the music for me yet, but I have seen the artwork, and the artwork is fantastic. So you should buy the album just for the artwork.
Just based on the artwork. Nervous and the Kid, and the name of the album is Good Morning Giantess.
Good Morning Giantess. All right. Well, that's exciting. So, okay. Well, I forgot to mention the reason Chris is not here with us is because he's in London.
Having to
take one for the team and go over there. He's over there at a book conference for Book Baby. Tough life he lives.
I know it.
I can see from all the photos he's been posting on Facebook. I know it's really hard going to London. So, all right, we're not bitter.
Nope.
No. And I'll be doing some traveling, going to a music conference. If anyone listening is in Canada and goes to the ECMA conference on Prince Edward Island, I will be there this coming weekend and would love to have you say hello. So.
And I'll just be holding down the fort.
You will be. You'll be right here.
Here in Portland, Oregon.
All right. Well, let's get to some news.
Baby.
Music.
Music. News.
We've been talking about a move to cloud-based music consumption, and the cloud wars have officially begun. In a surprise move, Amazon unexpectedly launched a cloud music player and service that would allow users to access and play their music anywhere from any device. This includes music purchased from the Amazon MP3 store and music uploaded from a user's personal library using the new Amazon Cloud Drive. The Amazon Cloud Drive gives users 5 gigabytes of free storage space to work with, and all your MP3 purchases through Amazon will be stored there for free, no matter how large the storage space. It's still unclear what this will mean for the industry, as it's been rumored that Apple was in talks with all the labels to provide a similar service for a long time, while Amazon's move seems to have been made without the blessing of the major labels. We will be hearing a lot more about this issue in the coming year. Google Search just launched a social component so that users can recommend particular search results to friends. Similar to the like button for Facebook or the tweet this function you may see on blogs, Google hopes the plus one will become a popular feature in the design of websites. Since the plus one is so new, you can keep an eye out and become an early adopter in terms of your own music marketing. For the first time, Facebook now allows personal user profiles to be converted into official artist band or business pages, as Facebook calls them, turning all your friends into fans. The profile to business page migration tool will help people who either created a personal profile for a business before pages existed or accidentally started accumulating fans as friends instead of likes. The migration tool should come as exciting news to artists struggling with the decision of whether to continue a profile with its limited capabilities or start a page from scratch with zero fans. Facebook has not formally announced the tool, but it appears to be available worldwide. Facebook has added a new Help Center article on converting profiles to pages with details about the migration process, and we'll put a link to that on the podcast website. And finally, YouTube has officially announced and officially rolled out YouTube Live. YouTube Live is sort of the beginning steps to creating a YouTube Live experience similar to Ustream. At this point, YouTube is only offering certain live shows and plans to roll out slowly to preferred partners. And it's assumed that eventually they'll make the service available to all YouTube users. So keep your eye out for that. And those were the headlines.
Wow, that is a lot of news. A lot of the big online media companies making some moves.
Yeah, it's kind of coming down to iTunes versus Amazon and then Google versus Facebook. It's kind of like the Coke Wars of Coke and Pepsi. But so interesting stuff. Amazon, that was a very surprise move. There was no rumors of that in the blogosphere at all. And I mean, people had kind of assumed that would happen, but all the talk was about iTunes and iTunes negotiating with labels and rumors around that. And then suddenly, bam, there it is. Amazon's got it up. And so you get five gigs of memory storage for free. And I didn't mention this in the news item, but if you make a Amazon MP3 purchase, you automatically get bumped up to 20 gig. I mean, so that's like the size of an iPod almost. I mean, that's more storage than that's most likely on people's iPhones.
Yeah.
And some of the smaller iPod touches and things like that. So it's a pretty big deal, and it's a nice player. I personally don't use Amazon MP3 to buy music. I know some people that do and love it. And so it's interesting to see what happens. The labels were quite surprised, and they don't like being surprised.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be interesting. I have an Apple iPod Touch, it just seems to make more sense for me to use the iTunes Store. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people probably are still along those lines, but I think that people that are moving into using the Android telephones and stuff like that, it may be more advantageous for them to start using the cloud service through Amazon.
Yeah, and they do have an app for the Android that allows you to, you know, basically play it. I think with an iPhone, you just have to do it over Safari. I haven't tried it, but obviously iTunes isn't going to let them put a app in the App Store
right. That
directs people to Amazon MP3.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting, too. Once Google launches its music service, it's going to be a lot more geared towards the Android, which is going to put Amazon in this weird place.
Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about that because, you know, everyone's been kind of fighting Apple. It's like suddenly another big gun gets in the arena and two of them are on the same platform. That's going to be interesting. The other thing I didn't mention is that a lot of people probably use Dropbox. Dropbox also announced a player. So any audio files you put in your Dropbox account, they have a player now that will play them, and it's a nice, clean player that automatically recognizes them. We should have an article about that on the DIY Musician blog very soon. We just haven't gotten around to writing it, but it's kind of all these pieces coming into play. It's all going to be cloud-based soon, but Dropbox doing that kind of also, I don't know, it seemed like them jumping in that arena might make SoundCloud a little upset. It's just all these people bumping into each other all of a sudden.
All trying to get there because they know where it's going. Everyone's figured out, okay, music is better in the cloud. So, you know, and a Goliath like iTunes, you know, they have all this red tape they got to work through in order to get it working correctly. And everybody else is like, let's just do it.
Going to the Google thing. The plus one button. I haven't seen these popping up yet, but apparently their new CEO said that their raises will be tied directly to the amount of progress Google makes in the social arena. So there's a lot of people that are very, very concerned about stuff like this happening at Google. So
interesting.
They're definitely trying to capture that web space, and they totally can. They just got to roll out some products that have some better user interfaces and that come out of beta at some point.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I mean the plus one button in general, like it's funny because they're rolling out all these social social networking services all kind of do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, probably because the way Google is, they have so many different departments working on so many different things. They keep on launching these products that are kind of similar and they're all social networking related, like these Google Hotspot and some of the
like Google Places.
Yeah, Google Places and some of the, you know, the Google ratings and Google shopping stuff. And, you know, there's all these different ways of like, sharing your reviews and reviewing companies and reviewing products. And I do, the one thing about the Google Plus One that seems interesting to me is that how it works with search results.
Yeah, that's the one thing. It's if, you know, you have a product with a lot of pluses, if that will add into their little algorithm about search,
right,
and affect the search results.
I mean, it also seems a little bit dangerous for them to mess with something that is sacred.
Yeah, because people will start gaming that system the second it's launched. So it'll be interesting. All they know is that Facebook has been taking over the web, and I, you know, hear things about Facebook adding search and things like that in, and that scares Google. They were once the only player, and now they're getting attacked from all sides. So.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Speaking of Facebook, that one thing we mentioned about being able to convert your profile into a page, eventually it seems like they're just going to have to do away with the distinct
pages. Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
But for now, where as an artist this may really affect you is if you're a solo artist. I know a lot of solo artists, this has been a big issue, that you know they start a Facebook page as just themselves because it's their name, they're the solo artist, and
right.
Then they start getting a bunch of friends and kind of struggling whether or not to start a page because now the page experience is going to be almost identical, you know, as far as like the same content you might be putting out. They look the same where originally pages looked completely different and now they're kind of the same experience. And so it's kind of struggling, well, do I start over from scratch or do I just keep this because you're going to be capped at 5,000 friends on a regular Facebook page profile. So, they now have this tool that apparently they don't really publicize that you can convert your profile into a page.
And vice versa. Well, there's probably some musicians out there listening who've had that issue or have that issue and can use that tool. I think that there was a lot of confusion in the beginning about how musicians would represent themselves on Facebook, and it was very different from MySpace. And I mean, I guess the one fear I have is that if they do make, you know, a business or a band page the same as a Facebook profile, that we descend into MySpace again where everyone's spamming everybody.
Well, I mean, it's basically with Facebook, I mean, you can't just reach out to anybody. They have to like friend you first.
Right.
So I could see at some point, I mean, it's just Facebook has gotten to a point where they have created a very confusing user experience and it changes almost daily.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to do something to figure out how to streamline it, or they will end up in a place like MySpace. They're starting to get ads all over. The stream is starting to get cluttery looking because they've allowed a lot more features, which can be cool. But at the same time, like, you know, I look down my Facebook feed and it just looks like a mess. And it's not visually easy to scan down is like it used to be. And, you know, I'm kind of have some frustrations with using Twitter, but I check in with Twitter more because it's easy to just flip, you know, on my phone, just scroll down quickly. If anything catches my eye, I see it, you know.
Yeah.
But with Facebook, it's starting to get a little cluttered. That's something that, you know, they've got to figure out how to simplify the process and how to stick to one user interface before they start losing people. But for now, they're
the top of the world.
The top of the world, which usually means you're on your way down.
I know. Good old Mark Zuckerberg and his money bags.
That was a good movie, though.
Oh, yeah?
That's something. And YouTube, yeah, they just this past Friday announced YouTube Live. I'm sure Ustream is a little concerned in Justin.tv, but for the time being, it's a closed system. So they will be rolling it out in stages to partners, which most of our listeners probably aren't partners. Some of you who have done some really cool things with YouTube could possibly be partners, you know, like Pomplamoose. They are obviously partners, but you have to get a certain number of videos, and they don't really say views. They really don't say what the number is. It's kind of a case-by-case basis. So if you are a partner, you may see that coming soon, and then eventually they'll roll it out to everybody, I would assume, as a Ustream type.
And how do you become a partner? You just get a lot of traffic on YouTube?
You have to apply. It's like youtube.com/partners.
Okay. But why would they let you, or why would they deny you, just if they think you're...
They want... It's because you can... They start... If you have enough views, they'll start running ads on your...
Okay.
Your videos, and you can make money. There's some other benefits of being a partner, like you can choose your own thumbnails, you can do better branding of your page. There's a whole bunch of little things like that, but the main point of it is that you can then make money off of your video views.
Gotcha, gotcha.
So they don't allow it for anybody, which I don't know why not. So that's all. There was a lot of news, lots of big things happening, lots of things we'll be hearing about for a while. The cloud, Google fighting Facebook,
YouTube,
the big battle between Amazon and iTunes, and then Google eventually. So good stuff. Well, let's get into a little recap of our last episode, my interview with Seth Godin. And I bet everyone thought we weren't ever going to do an interview again.
It'd have been a while.
I figured we better pull out a good one.
Well, you know, it's funny too, because you and I were talking and about who we should interview next. And I sort of threw out Seth Godin, kind of like, didn't really necessarily think it would happen, but I was like, you know, we could interview Seth Godin. And we kind of laughed about it. And I was like, well, you should email him. And Kevin's like, I'm going to email him.
He actually responded to me in less than 20 minutes and said, okay. So, yeah, it was kind of like one of those things that you and I were trying to take some of our own advice, and we crafted it an email. I think it was like 3 sentences tops, but we were making sure it said exactly what we wanted, exactly who we were, and exactly what his commitment would be.
Yeah, because he's a very sought after speaker, and you know, he gets hundreds of emails a day, so we had to make it very, very short and very like attuned to his communication style.
Yeah.
I mean, if you read his blog, the guy's brief.
So, and it worked.
It worked.
We got him on the podcast, and if you couldn't tell from the sound of my voice, I was extremely sick. The interview was at 7:30 on a Monday morning, and I had been the sickest I had been in years.
Oh,
and I thought there's no way I can cancel this. And so, I thought the final product was good, but boy, I was struggling in the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell from your voice in the interview, but I think it did turn out to be a really good interview. And if you guys haven't listened, you should go back and listen to it. I mean, Seth Godin has all sorts of great books, and his blog is really cool. But He has some great things to say about musicians.
Yeah. So speaking of, it's always interesting that when you have someone like this on the podcast, because there's all sorts of opinions about people like Seth. Lots of people love what he has to say. A lot of people think it's smoke and mirrors. And personally, I don't look at these type of folks as someone who's going to give me the individual steps, like all the little tactical moves I need to make.
Right.
And he even said that in the podcast, that he's not here to give you, you know, the little marketing tactics. He said it some, I think that's how he said it. And some people get frustrated by that. But when I listen to somebody like Seth, it's kind of like,
he's a big picture guy.
Yeah. It's just kind of the inspiration that it gives you to unleash your own creativity and think outside the box. Maybe get out of the rut you've been in and kind of see things from a different perspective, and then, you know, kind of get excited and make something happen.
Yeah, I really like what he had to say about choosing yourself, about how as independent musicians, we so often think that, you know, or hope that someone is going to discover us, you know, mm-hmm. and well, that myth has been perpetuated for so long. And it was more kind of what the music business was based on in the past, yeah. is like, you're going to get picked if you do a really good job.
Yeah. And we still see that myth perpetuated with things like American Idol, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, you know, all these people that make it in those type of contests and stuff, and then they're like the fourth runner up. They make it seem like they have no future. It's like, you're still an amazing vocalist. Go out and make something happen.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait for these people to judge you to say you're good.
And see, I would argue that's always been a myth. Anyone who is, you know, like, I would say that the American Idol people, they're not waiting around to get picked. They're actually, like, trying to make a career and mm-hmm. going to tryouts and going to try to get on TV and, you know, like, busting their butt, trying to make a career of themselves. It's not like someone called them up to their house and said, hey, you're going to be on American Idol, you know? I think it's the same thing with bands, you know, in the 60s and 70s when there was, you know, this sort of elite record label system in the 80s. Even though you still had to cut the mustard and get picked by the record execs, people were picking themselves first. They yeah. were being like, I rock, my music rocks, you guys can like it and put me on a label if you want, but I'm going to, you know.
Yeah, I think this kind of makes me think back to, I think it's episode number 2 or whatever, when we interviewed Alicia Rose, and dealing with somebody like that who is a club booker and has their own kind of agenda,
right,
and has strong personality. And, you know, I think they're impressed by a band that doesn't come up saying, you know, please pick me, but comes up saying, you need to have us. And, you know, we're making stuff happen.
This is what we have to offer you.
We're making stuff happen.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, whether or not they like your music can become secondary.
Right.
And so I think it's kind of just positioning yourself in a way that how you approach people, not that you're a jerk or have an attitude, but that you understand people's intentions, you understand what they want, and you're saying, we can offer this. We're not asking you to please select us. We're saying, this is why you should have us.
Right.
And I think that's kind of changing the tone for how you communicate in your, you know, business relationships as a musician, because, you know, music is anything in the creative field. People are always asking for something, you know, and instead of asking, tell them what you can offer. And that's the difference between, you know, on a small scale of picking yourself over waiting for them to pick you. Cause it's, you know, it can be agonizing if you're in that kind of gatekeeper position and all you do is have people say, pick me, and you have nothing to go off of.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get, you know, the thing is, you know, in a big label situation, you do have a lot of help. Like when you're making the bad decisions, when you don't understand how to like get, you know, how to fill up a venue, you have like a marketing person who's going to like help you mm-hmm. make those decisions and stuff like that. But you still have to get to that point, you know, where someone is helping you with those decisions. And that's not all that much different than it is, you know, today. And like you said, it's really important to think from the, you know, if there's a gatekeeper, there's a booker and you want to get a show at the club, you got to start thinking, how many people can I bring to this show? And is that going to impress them? And, you know, maybe ask them, what is, you know, what is the draw? What do I need to do in order to, you know, impress, you know, meet your needs?
Yeah. 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 It's something that, you know, artists struggle with because, you know, it's just something that when it comes down to it, after you've finished making your art, you just want someone to pick you and not have to continue to work at making them known. But, you know, the book that Seth wrote, Tribes, is a lot about this, about, you know, finding a group of people and leading them, whether it's a group of people that aren't already organized, or a group of people that are somewhat organized, and you just, you know, making sense, it makes sense for you to kind of lead that group in such a way. Similar to, you know, to break that down into music a little bit more, it could be like your local scene, organizing your local scene and getting some cool things going in your city. You know, when I moved to Portland, it seemed like the scene was a little bit more fractured, and it was kind of in a transition period. And, you know, it's real easy to kind of get in there and really be an advocate for the local scene. I didn't do this, so don't get the impression that I did. But it's really easy in those situations to get bands together, kind of organize people with similar interests in helping, like, a musical scene grow. And then suddenly you're in the middle of it, and you're able to kind of be a leader in that arena. That's one way it could happen. Cause I know a lot of people email the podcast or call in saying that, you know, they're not in a major city and there's some bands there, but there's no real organized scene. Well, organize it. You be the leader and lead the charge, and it'll definitely help to grow your career. The other thing that we see happen here all the time at CD Baby is, you know, people having music that appeals to, you know, some subculture group.
Yeah.
Whether it be rockabilly, whether it be Celtic music. And we've seen some bands do an amazing job of showing up in those communities and being like leaders among those genre subgroups. And it's just really cool to see that happen. You'll never hear about them in the mainstream press, but these are artists that have found a way to really connect with their fans and also really thrive and make a living making music.
You know, that's funny, as I kept on thinking while you were talking about Dan Zanes, who we also interviewed. He appeals, I mean, he does kids music, but I think more importantly, like, he appeals to parents, because, and especially like parents who are music listeners who don't want to listen to Barney all the time, you know, that, like, he's, you know, he's a great performer. He does sort of more, you know, Bob Dylan-esque folk music, but he's a kids performer. And I just feel like he just kind of hit on this, like, thing, you know, he just appealed to this group of people who's not everybody, but, it, you know, it took off like wildfire, and he got his Disney show and everything.
Yeah.
But,
well, right there, I mean, what he did, and I think if you're looking beyond what, okay, so my music appeals to a certain genre subgroup, so right. What do I do next? Where with Dan Zanes, he didn't just target a group of people, he was meeting a specific need.
Right.
And he capitalized on that specific need and understood that, you know, when you listen to that interview, which I think it's interview number 4. We're going way back today.
Yeah, it was like the first the interview.
Class, yeah. It was the first interview we did, but it was episode number 4, I think. But what he found is that his music was being passed around by parents a lot of times. You know, people hanging out at the, you know, on their play dates saying, oh, you should check out this artist, Dan Zanes. It wasn't like the kids were clamoring for it.
Right.
And he realized that there was a need, that parents get tired of, you know, there's not a lot of good kids music and they get tired of listening to the crap, and they'd love to listen to music with their families and enjoy it with their families, and they just needed somebody to rally around, and Dan fit the bill. So that's a good example. Anything else we can draw from episode 2 or 3 or 1 while we're at it?
I don't even remember what those episodes were. But I think it's a good, you know, I think when we start talking about the, you know, the good interviews we've had, it means that we're, you know, we've had with Seth Godin another good interview that touches on those sort of those points that have always come up again that are so important to marketing yourself as a musician and being a musician in general, is that they evoke the things that the smart people we've had on the show talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that, it's kind of a running theme through most successful musicians who don't just hit it big by, you know, signing some random major label contract that happens to work out for them. Which brings me to the final thing I'll say about the Seth interview, or the final point he made, which a lot of people might have found offensive. I found it very liberating. It was, he said, what you need to do is to stop worrying about selling music and just go out and make the music you love and music that you're passionate about. I'm paraphrasing, by the way. and go make the music that you're passionate about. And he said, it's probably not going to sell. And then he said, but the stuff in the middle is not selling either. And the stuff in the middle, meaning, you know, like your average label artist isn't right. selling either. So instead of focusing on numbers and dollars, focus on making the music you love. And then you'll probably feel fulfilled as an artist. And I found that somewhat liberating and, a good piece of advice, because when you think about it, usually when you're connecting with an artist, like you're a fan and the artist is just really, you know, you just love what they're doing, it's usually because they're very passionate about what they're doing. Most art, what drives it is that the artist is so passionate about it, it just kind of, it's contagious, you know. And when they're making good stuff and they're passionate about it, that drives you to want to support them and to purchase music and to purchase their merchandise and follow them at shows. If all you focus on is, how am I going to sell this? I think it's a piece of the puzzle, but if that's all you focus on, you're missing out on the whole picture of an artist and you're not going to connect with people. And so when he said that, I thought, a lot of people are going to hate that statement, but it's true. The things that artists do that nobody can fabricate is that they have this spark, like the X factor, this thing that is just in them that's contagious that you just can't replicate, and it's because they're passionate about what they're doing, and you just can't go create a robot that has passion about something. And that's what I think has that spark that everything else flows from. So if you don't have that, if all you're focusing on is, well, I've got my music everywhere, why isn't it selling? Then chances are you need to check what your intentions. If you know, no one graduates from high school or college and goes, I need a job now, I guess I'll go to the guitar store and get a guitar, right? Because that's how you make money.
Well, and I'll add a little bit of sagistic advice to that. One of the things that happened to Dan Zanes was that he discovered where his success was. It came to him. He didn't lay out a path and say, this is what I want. He did lay out a path. He tried to make it as a rock and roll musician and had mild success. But when he really made it, the universe basically said, you know, like, this is what you're good at. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he paid attention enough of the way people reacting to his music and be like, oh, this is what I'm good at. And sometimes I think you just need to kind of listen and find out, you know, where you're succeeding and sort of like move in that direction, rather than trying to walk the well-worn path, you know, of getting signed and getting, you know, getting picked up by a record label or, you know, getting on American Idol or whatever. I think that a lot of times you'll find more success if you're just able to pick up on those little signals.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of stop telling people why they should buy your music and start listening to why they are attracted to you as an artist in your music.
Yeah.
And when you start listening and are passionate about what you're doing, I think you're going to be able to make those obvious connections that if you're just too busy thinking of all the ways why people should buy your music or support you as an artist, you're going to miss some of that because you're too busy talking and not listening enough.
Yeah.
All right, we solved it all.
We solved
We're
it
done.
All. Go to work. I think we just made like 5,000 successful artists.
That's
today.
That's right. Or a bunch of people mad at us, which is probably the case. But anyway, those are always, interviews like Seth are always good. It gets you thinking differently. And a lot of what he said is a lot of what I've been thinking about lately, and I think I'm going to write a blog article about it. If you have any comments or questions or feedback that you'd like to give us about the interview with Seth Godin, we'd love to hear it. You can call our listener line at 206-426-5683, or you can email us at info@cdbabypodcast.com. And people have been weighing in with comments on the podcast blog at cdbabypodcast.com. Always some interesting things. Robert Lee King made an appearance, which people appreciated. You can read that thread there. But yeah, it's always fun to read people's comments and hear feedback on an interview like this that's a little bit less informational and more just thought-provoking. So we'd love to hear what you have to say so you can do it there. And speaking of, we have some calls to get to, so let's do it now.
Hey, guys. This is Mason Douglas. That's Mason with an M as Mary. Check everything out at www.masondouglasmusic.com. So we got done listening to episode 106, and I think Bolt or one of you guys was listening to the Jeff Beck podcast, and ended up buying the album because you got so influenced by the stories behind the album. That was going to be just my recommendation as a songwriter and artist in Nashville. A lot of the stuff that we do out there is completely songwriter based, and I can always see a difference in CD sales whenever I'm able to tell the stories about the songs and behind the album, as compared to just sitting in a club and playing song after song and really not digging down deep into them. But the more you can tell about why the audience wants to hear what they're listening to and why they should be listening, the better off you are as a performer and for selling those CDs. So just want to give that info out there. A little bit of advice also on the CD release parties, kind of the same thing. Released my album last October, and we instead of just doing a standard show where we played song after song after song, got up there with everybody who made the album, told little stories behind recording, behind writing some of the songs, did karaoke, had contests, and it was just more of a party and a celebration than it was just a release performance. So just a little tidbit there as well. Just kind of gave the people a little bit more insight into the actual album itself and the songs behind it, and had a good time. Something a little bit different than what they probably typically would see at a CD release party. So anyway, my 2 cents for the day. Again, this is Mason Douglas at masondouglasmusic.com. Keep up the good work, and talk to you guys soon. Thanks.
Hey, this is Jay from Bosco and Peck. I just got done listening to the Seth Godin interview, Building a Tribe. We started to build our own community around our music with a podcast we started last year in May called the Song Swap Podcast. And basically what we do is cover another indie band song. They cover one of ours. We do an interview and we release it as a podcast. And we're halfway through our second season. We just released a compilation CD in January with all the songs from season one. And we're gearing up to do the same for season two. So it's been a great way to spread our music to other bands' fan bases and then to ours. And if anybody listening wants to be part of the show, you can check it out at thesongswap.com. And if you want to check out our music, you can check us out at boscopeck.com. That's Bosco, BoscoAndPeck.com. Thanks a lot. Great show, guys.
All right. Thank you for those calls.
That's a pretty cool idea, the Song Swap. I've heard some bands recently getting mileage out of trading cover songs and covering each other's songs, but I haven't really thought about doing it in a podcast form. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you can go to their website. I have it up right now, and it looks like it's a legit podcast. So, yeah, it looks like a good idea. It's available in the iTunes podcast directory, too. So if you're listening to this, you probably subscribe that way. You can subscribe to it there, too. So, yeah, it's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that, and it seems like it's working for them. And it's a cool way to tie into other bands' fan bases in a authentic way. So it's not like you're just spamming some other band's fan base. It's like there's a reason for them to be interested in you now.
Yeah, that's cool.
So Jay, I think his name was, you may be getting a bunch of emails from our listeners wanting to be a part of the podcast, but that may be a good problem. We'll
yeah,
see.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the first caller, Nathan, I would agree with what he's saying. People in Nashville, he said he's based out of Nashville, are usually pretty good at this because Nashville's a real songwriting town.
Yeah.
It's very different than maybe here in Portland, where the chances of getting someone to talk about their song is usually a little less likely, where in Nashville, it's kind of everyone expects to, you know. A lot of them are trying to sell their songs anyway. But interesting that you brought that up. We also did an article for the DIY Musician blog that was based off of feedback from the CD Baby Facebook page that was, what's the number one way you see bands annoying their fans? And somebody commented saying when, you know, the person gets up there and talks about their song longer than the actual song itself. Sometimes there's a good story that merits that, but sometimes, you know, when you see an artist that they play a 3-minute song and talk for 10 minutes in between each, you're just like, come on already, play some music.
Well, I really liked his idea about telling stories of how the album was made mm-hmm. during your CD release show, because we're going to have our CD release show in a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And my band went and recorded the album at the coast in a beach house. It was a whole bunch of people in a beach house for 3 days. So he had some pretty funny stories mm-hmm. from that, including one where my nephew fell down some stairs and terrified us all. my 2-year-old nephew. But that seems like a great idea. What a cool way to like make your album release show special is by, you know, telling the stories of how the album was made.
Yeah, yeah, it seems like an obvious one, but most people don't do it, and it is definitely interesting. I mean, the thing to remember with all your communications to your fan base is that for them, making an album is very mysterious in most cases, where for the musician, it's like, yeah, you go into some studio, whatever, you have Pro Tools at home, whatever, I've done it a million times, and it seems boring and typical, but for the, you know, average person, they don't know how it comes together. And some of the things that you see is boring and happen all the time, it might be unique and interesting to them. So you got to look at it from a different perspective and think of what might interest them. And, you know, a lot of times when you think back, you're like, oh, yeah, that is kind of interesting how this happened.
Yeah, you'd be like, you know how I hit all those notes? Auto-tune.
Auto-tune, yeah. Hopefully not, but... But, you know, it's also a story. No one said you can't embellish.
Yeah.
or present it in a way that's a little more entertaining, even though, you know, when you're actually there, it's like, that was kind of funny. But when you kind of set the stage in a proper way and use good storytelling tactics, you can make it, you know, something that's very cool, and people are drawn to the music. They want to hear it, and they go out and support you. So,
yeah, start in the action. Don't worry about a whole bunch of setup.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't need a whole bunch of like details about the setting.
No. Yeah, character. Start with the action. Get to the point, and that's what people want to hear. So, I think, you know, some of our music career stories did a good job of that, getting to the point,
yeah,
and kind of selling the story. You know, all of them that we played had their highlights, but some of them were really good at just like grabbing you from the beginning. And this is just a craft, part of being an artist, that's good to learn. So, well, those were good calls. We appreciate it, guys. Unless you have anything else, I think
that's it for me.
Just want to remind you, like I said, that you can call our listener line at 206-426-5683. We'd love to get your feedback, comments, questions, any story you have. Just try to keep your comments brief, and it's nice if they're 2 minutes or less, which seems like a long time, but when you get on there and get a good ramble going, it's 5-10 minutes before you know it. So
start in the action.
Yeah, start in the action. And you can email us info@cdbabypodcast.com, and we'll put links. There were several things in the news items we mentioned that we'll put links to and on the podcast post for this. And I think that's everything. If we still appreciate your support by leaving good comments on the iTunes page. that helps out a bunch, and we're always appreciative and like hearing from you. And especially things you're liking about the show, things you'd like us to, people you'd like us to have on the podcast, that's helpful as well. So that's it. We're done. Next time, I think we will have all three of us here. So we'll see.
We might have some good stories too from London.
From London, and me freezing myself at Prince Edward Island, where there apparently is a music conference, but it's still really cold. So, all right, we'll catch you next time.
Adios. Bye.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.